A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back to the Sofa Cinema Club episode number 2. I'm Colton Smith and as always I'm joined by
Jack P. Shepherd,
Ben Price.
The Sofa Cinema Club is our podcast where we educate each other on films. It's all about the films we should have seen, but we haven't. Each week we pick a film for each other to watch, and then we come into the studio and talk about what we loved, hated and rated. Now the beauty of our podcast is that anyone can join in. All you have to do is watch along with the film at home and then join us every Thursday to see what we thought. This week's film has been chosen by Jack and Ben and it is the horror film that is The Exorcist. But before we get into talking about that, how has your week been? Jack, you're always full of surprises. What have you been up to this week?
Rammed. Very busy, Jack. Come on, talk us through it. So much to talk about. So much.
Absolute. Kicked off. It was absolutely so uneventful. I can't even begin. It's just boring, isn't it?
Is there much difference between your lockdowns, Jack? Because we had the first, the Lego lockdown, as we like to call it, and Boris likes to call it. What's the second lockdown called?
I think the second one, I think everyone just goes, oh, we've done this now. I mean, yeah, we know it's for a good cause, but we're just really bored. We're running out of the stuff that we're not doing, if that makes sense.
I don't know what I'm not doing. I don't know what I'm missing, which is what I'm not doing. Yeah. Haircut-wise, what did you do? Panic haircut? Coulson had a panic haircut.
I didn't in the end. I just thought, oh, I can't be bothered. It's only a month, hopefully.
I did have a panic haircut. I
had a panic haircut.
I've also got a lockdown hair confession.
Ooh, hello. Hello, lockdown hair confession.
I've gone back. I've gone back on the John Frieda.
Oh, have you?
Just because.
I thought you were going to say, I don't know, I've gone back. You never went off the John Frieda, Coulson?
No, I did, Ben. I did.
He's fallen off the wagon.
Hello, my name's Coulson Smith, and I use John Frieda.
I thought you might have noticed, Ben. I have to say, I thought you might have noticed. But basically, I had my hair perfect. We spoke about what colour hair I wanted. I got it to that dead grass. I got it to that silver platinum. I worked so hard. But the sun stopped, and I thought that was it. I thought it was all over. And then my barber said, look, when was the last time you were John Frieda-ing? And I said, I'm not John Frieda-ing now.
You don't get that much very often, do you, Coulson? When was the last time you were on, you know, with the John Frieda?
I said, I've been back. I've been purple shampooing. I've been purple shampooing all the way. I've got purple fingernails. I've got a purple scalp. And he went, that's it, mate. He went, you've got to go back blonde. You've got to go blonde to bleach it, and then we go purple on that. And lockdown happened, and the night Boris announced it, I got on Amazon, and I typed in, John Frieda, go blonder. And I'm back. I'm back on the lockdown hair hike.
Did it go back to kind of ginger?
No, but obviously now it is like a gingery grey, isn't it? So it's going to go back to
how lovely.
Sounds
hi,
great.
John. I'd like a gingery grey, please.
Ah, the Mick Hucknall. Step this way.
We've been expecting you. Holding back the years? Come this way, sir.
Listen, John Frieda's job is that, like, Simpsons yellow. And once I've got it to that, I can then go full purple shampoo again.
Oh, hold on. I'm completely confused now. So the John Frieda Go Blonder is not purple.
No, the John Frieda Go Blonder is like a lemon juice. That's what Jack used.
I just used lemon.
Yeah.
I went old school. I went caveman hair dye.
You went 1980s, sun in.
So, but basically, the plan for me for lockdown is go blonde and then back on the platinum. Every lockdown.
I tell you what, we've gone from Jack's slightly boring lockdown to your very racy, Colson. Yeah. Very racy.
Full on.
I wonder if we can get sponsored by John Frieda. Any chance?
Do you know what? I actually get my shampoo from Approved Food. I genuinely do. Ben, there was a lot of concern on social media for Star with Bonfire Night.
Well, luckily, the old lockdown kiboshed the old fireworks, didn't it? There were none round my way. She was fine, loving it.
There was a lot here.
There was a lot here in Manchester, yeah. Everybody went mental, like it was the purge.
Set it off in the house. It's lockdown. Set it off in the house. One of you. 2 metres.
To the point, when you opened the balcony door at the flat, you couldn't see. It was smog in your face. It was bad.
What, from all the fireworks?
Yeah, it was bad.
So where are the people buying them, though? What, they've bought them before lockdown and saved them? Because the shops were shut.
Panic buying. Fireworks, toilet roll, John Frieda. Everything you need.
Oh, what, before lockdown's announced, everyone's gone, quick, I need the party box. I need it now.
Yeah.
I need the indoor fireworks, please. Yeah. No, Star was great. She's just discovered heated seats in the car.
She's a very middle-class dog, from what my understanding.
She could play. She's got it absolutely sorted. So she has her walk in the wood. You put it on 2 bars. I don't think 3, but I think 3 bars is human, isn't it? Two bar. She sits there. She's like, oof. And she won't get out of the car. So sometimes you just leave it for like 5 minutes. She loves it.
My dogs have got a heated mat.
Have they?
Yours have?
You plug in the heated mat and they go. They love that.
Could they survive outside, Jack, or not really?
No.
Not a chance.
They don't go outside. They're sort of like inside dogs. I mean, they do go outside a little bit, but they'll walk for a tiny little bit and their little feet get cold and you have to pick them up.
Do they get into bed with you?
No, we're not having them in bed. I'm not doing that.
Okay. In the mornings, do they get into bed?
If it's a weekend...
Oh,
Hanny usually likes a cuddle with the girls in the morning, so I have to go down, do the coffee run, do the tea run, bring the girls upstairs for a kiss and a cuddle.
Do the dogs drink tea or coffee?
Lady has been quite partial to a cup of tea, actually.
Has she?
Yeah, she has.
Little saucer.
Every now and again, she'll have a little lick of the dregs.
Steady on, steady. Come on.
It's a family show.
It's a family show. So not really much has changed for us, has it, in lockdown, really? Work's the same.
Yeah, we're still at work, so everything's tickety-boo.
We did get a delivery, though, yesterday, didn't we?
We did.
Which brings us nicely on to Snack of the Week, because we got our snacks.
Now, Colson got different snacks from me, but I think I got the same snacks as you, Jack.
Right.
And I obviously kicked off my snack adventure with something I'm very partial to. I used to have a lot, but I haven't had for years, is the old chocolate golf ball.
What was that?
What was that? Brilliant.
Yeah.
I had it watching the film. Great. I mean, you can't eat a whole one.
No.
But very good. We got on the crisps, didn't we? We started a bit like a banquet, didn't we, Colson? Colson, it went to my box and packed his box away.
No. I put my box away, decided what I was going to have. Obviously, my box is obviously for a finely tuned athlete. So it just consists of protein bars and proper corn. Whereas you two got the Lindt chocolate golf balls.
I got the chocolate golf balls.
Mini eggs.
Mini eggs I've cracked open tonight. Very, very good. They're very good. Sensations, I'm going to save those. There's actually some very good things. What else was in there?
Lentil chips. They were in there.
Yep.
There was a bounty.
There is a bounty, yeah.
And a dark bounty. I hadn't seen one of them since the 90s.
I didn't have a dark bounty.
Pork scratchings.
Pork scratchings, bring them back.
Yeah. Scampi fries.
Scampi fries. It was like looking at a vending machine in the 80s, wasn't it? It was like, ooh, scampi fries. I didn't even know they sold those anymore.
Yeah.
You've got it all in there. And if you want your ultimate movie snack box, you can get yours too from approvefood.co.uk. And remember to use code SOFA10 for 10% off. And then you can snack like we do during the films. If you fancy a bit of a golf ball, you can have a golf ball.
If you fancy a golf ball just as a young girl is throwing up in a priest's face in the film. I felt a bit ill just as we watched The Exorcist. She howked all over him and I've got half a golf ball in my mouth.
There was a point mid-film, I have to say, because me and Ben, you know, it's the first film of snacks, so you know we've gone quite deep.
He's got Poof and Corner. Obviously we're missing you in the middle there, Shepherd.
Yeah.
Because you had a bit of Poof, didn't you?
A Poof sharer.
I've got Chaise Longue, but now the big lad isn't so big. He gets cold.
Mm.
So he had to have blanket as well.
Yeah.
So I had golf ball, Chaise Longue, that was it. He had blanket, two popcorns, some vegan sweets, and my crisps.
When he popped the old golf ball in, it was like he had a gobstopper. Like, you should have seen him. He didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, but it's a good idea, though. Bit of snacks, isn't it, watching the film?
And it's lint. It's lint, yeah, isn't it? That's good chocolate. No. Good chocolate.
And if you get stuck, you can actually play golf with it.
By the way, Jack, just to obviously, you know, sing the praises of our sponsor, because that's what we do. How much do you think the box is worth?
Oh, this is a good one, you know. This is good. Slight game show.
Could go wrong. We could lose a sponsor because of this.
I'd say, like...
it's a big box.
I don't know, like... £10 or something?
It's a fiver.
It's a fiver?
For the Sofa Cinema Club family, it is a fiver. And that's not even with your discount. But yeah, there was a point in the film where Ben turned around, looked at me in the eye as I was rustling a bag of popcorn and went, I think this snack's a bad idea if you're going to make this much noise.
But he did the full, you know, the one where you've eaten all of it and then you tip it into your face. And you tipped it into your face and then you did the, ooh, suddenly you decided to try and tidy up. Well, put these away. Then you had a piss, which sounded like you'd switched the hose on. You'd obviously not had a piss for like 3 hours. And then you got some more water.
We've got some more news from one of our podcast friends as well, haven't we? Disney are getting in the mood for Christmas and they have released their first ever Christmas advert.
Very good.
Yeah, very good. And it kind of has actually reminded me that it is close to Christmas.
Yeah, it is a bit weird, isn't it, this lockdown? I have found that a bit weird. It doesn't feel very Christmassy, does it? Feels like a long way away.
But we're gonna do our job to spread the Christmas cheer on the podcast. There's going to be Christmas episodes. And with Disney, with their new Christmas trailer, we're going to be doing a Christmas giveaway. So make sure you're keeping an eye on our social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Sofa Cinema Club, as we give away a special limited edition Christmas Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, it's good advert, very sweet.
Shall we do what we're here to do and talk about the film?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's giving a synopsis?
I'll have a go.
Whoa, here we go.
Ooh, he loves it. Look, he's excited. His little face.
He's excited.
Yes, okay. The Exorcist follows a single parent.
It's not going to be very quick.
<It's not. laughs> He hasn't started. Give him a chance.
Single parent family. Mum and daughter. Mum's actress. Daughter's 14-year-old, Reagan. She begins to become unwell, and the mother's scared and wondered what's wrong. First they think there's something wrong with her brain. It later transpires that she has a demon living inside of her, and the church think it's a good idea to do an exorcism, and they get two priests to come in and try and battle with the demon inside of the young girl to release it from her body.
I like what you've done there, Jack, because you've done it quite well, but you've almost done it deliberately shit so that the audience member that comes on next week feels much better about themselves.
I started off a bit shit.
No, I think you picked up a bit of momentum, actually.
You did well.
I picked it up.
You picked it up.
I thought, halfway through, I thought, just stick to the facts. Keep it clean, keep it simple.
I'm Jack P. Shepherd. This is my podcast. I can do it.
That's a textbook synopsis from Shepherd there. So the person, if we pick your film, they'll do their own synopsis, won't they?
Yeah.
Yes, they have to do their own synopsis. They have to do a voice recording, send it to our Instagram or Twitter.
When do we announce what the film is?
After this.
After this. Okay, right, great.
It's like we don't have meetings before we go live and recording it.
We don't.
Well, at least it's a good job me and producer Henry know what we're doing, isn't it? It's a good
job.
Thank
goodness for you two. Me and Jack are the eye candy. What I was going to say was, where did you watch this, Shepherd? Were you on your own?
I did watch it on my own. It was about midnight. It wasn't that long after we... I think it was the night we recorded Monster House, actually.
And then you watched it.
And then I was in the mood. I was thinking of the podcast, and I had nothing to watch. And I thought, do you know what? It was Halloween, or it was around that Halloween time, wasn't it? And I thought, do you know what? I'll stick it on. And... yeah.
Has Hanny seen it before? You've seen it a few times, haven't you, Jack?
I've seen it. She's seen it a long time ago. She's a fan.
I definitely started watching this with Jack once a period of time, but I literally watched 3 minutes because I never made it out of ancient Egypt when I watched it with you.
Iraq.
It's Iraq.
But yeah.
Ancient Iraq.
Ancient Iraq.
So we open up on Iraq, Max von Sydow.
Who, Jack, is younger than Ben.
10 years younger.
Yeah, he's got all the makeup on though, and everything. It's not
old.
Like he looks like that. Yeah, but he's got the makeup on, and prosthetics and everything.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't look like that at the time. Because I was thinking he looks old there, but he just died recently, didn't he?
Yeah,
he died not so long ago, and he's in like Minority Report.
And that's in 1974.
Yeah, but yeah, he was only 44.
They wanted Brando for that role.
Yeah, the director said no, because then it'll become a Brando film.
They had real hard time casting it, to not have the people who they cast overshadow the film and make it into you're just going to want to watch them. But Brando was interested.
Well, historically, they've always done that with horrors, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've always sort of cast people that are not really as big-time A-listers.
We've had this conversation before, you know. I remember Ben saying that there was like a thing with actors once in a period of time where they didn't like getting killed off. So a lot of them avoided horrors for that reason. But it is a thing, like, if you think about Halloween, is it Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
She's famous for horror films, isn't she? And there's so many actors that only ever do horror.
First horror to be nominated for an Oscar.
Was it?
Yeah, 10 Oscar noms.
Wow.
Is that more than Monster House?
No, I don't think so. I think Monster House definitely got best original cartoon and original story, as I seem to remember. So, Coulson, we've started off in Iraq.
Yep.
They're sort of doing the Antiques Roadshow, aren't they?
A Time Team is what I thought. Tim Robinson.
Time Team, very time good. Team. Tim Robbins, very good.
He's they're like doing... some architect. No, not architect. Archaeologist.
That's it. He's an archaeologist.
Yeah. Indiana
they're
Jones.
Looking for stuff. And someone says, oh, we found something. And he goes in and he gives it a little dust. And it's like a little sort of devil figurine, isn't it? With two faces. Is it two faces or something on it? And I thought this was brilliant. Immediately, his face drops. He knows what he's looking at. And that's the start of the film, isn't it? You're into it. They found something really bad.
Mm. It is a bit of a weird opening.
What do you think that is that they're actually sort of like... unearthing, that they are sort of...
It's like a
word?
Tomb or something, isn't it?
I think it's sort of like an Antichrist worship temple. That's what I sort of get from it. That's what I think.
Because that's meant to be the representation of the devil, isn't it?
Yeah.
Evil wards evil, and that's meant to be the devil's face.
Mm.
And I think you're right. He unearths something. They must be looking in a tomb and they've put it in, but yeah... Well, as soon as he sees it, he knows. It's almost like he wanted to find it, then he does find it and goes,
"Yeah,
oh shit, there's a curse associated to this."
Yeah.
For me, the film properly starts when we go into Georgetown.
In Washington.
Yeah, like, I think that Iraq bit I get, but it's Iraq. Iran bit, I get.
No, it's Iraq. It is Iraq.
It's just Iraq. It's just known as Iraq.
the desert bit, I think I get. But as soon as it goes into, you know, Georgetown, that's when we kind of get a feeling of a film and a story.
Yeah, but I suppose what it does, and we've talked about this before in other films, haven't we? It gives you a slight base, the story a base from somewhere else, an ancient evil. The excavation, he's in a different land. It's giving you a base for what's about to come in this more modern setting. And he's giving you the opening to the film to go, look, this is based in very, very deep historical evil. I know what you mean, but I really love that bit about the film, is that it roots it in this kind of really bad, evil place. And then we get to Georgetown, don't we? There's a movie star on set, and she's filming a new film.
What's her name?
Ellen Burstyn is the actress, and she plays Chris McNeil.
Because when we meet her, you know straight away that she's kind of a big deal, don't you? So they're filming a film, aren't they? She's a movie star.
Yeah, they're filming a film, and she's a big actress, and they've got a big crowd outside watching do a scene from the film. They complete the shoot, and then she does the little walk home, doesn't she?
And it's Halloween night. Quite fitting, yes. Actually, yeah.
And that's the only time, I didn't realise from watching it this time, but that's like the only time you hear the Mike Oldfield Tubular Bells.
And he doesn't use it again. You think...
No, yeah.
Not to the end. You think, hold on, that's mint tune. He uses it once.
Yeah, it's literally just... It's about 10 seconds of the song. And I always relate that song to The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I don't know if I even clocked to the song.
Did you not? The music. The little Tubular Bells. Mike Oldfield, yeah. Great song.
Is it a scary song?
It is a scary song.
It is, in that context. But he didn't write it for the film. It was written separately and then they used it. But it was like the biggest selling... Wasn't it the biggest selling album in the world for years and years and years?
Instrumental.
Yeah.
And when's that? Is that when she's walking home?
When she's walking, it's like a ding, ding, ding. I can't. Do you not remember? Maybe you don't. But yeah, you're right, Jack. I thought, so weird is I always thought, that's in It Loads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just that bit. And she's walking home. She goes home after filming and their daughter's there, isn't she? Regan. And the kind of nanny comes secretary.
And then it's your classic start to a scary movie, as in everything's fine, and then you start to hear these noises in the attic. And we all know from all the horror films, the rule is no one goes in the attic.
You don't go in the attic, you don't go in the cellar, and you don't go in the bathroom.
Or the dark. You avoid all that kind of stuff.
So you can't go anywhere. Basically, if you're in a horror, don't go anywhere. You can do it all in the day. Don't do anything at night.
Don't do anything at night.
Don't go for a poo. Don't go upstairs.
But she's got it sorted, as our movie star, because she thinks it's rats in the attic. So she speaks to the caretaker. She goes, you've got rats. Sorted.
And he goes, no rats. No rats.
I know, he's creepy. I liked him.
Yeah.
He did a very good little sort of, there's no rats in there. He was very, like, insistent, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And she's thinking, yeah, right.
Well, there is.
But there is rats.
I've heard them.
Belen. I've heard them.
And then one night, she hears it again. So she decides to go up into the attic to see what the noise is.
She uses the old classic, which I thought, the candle. I thought, hold on, why wouldn't you use a fucking torch if you use the candle, which is a clear, the blow, isn't it? Yeah. The flame's not going to survive.
I mean, it works great for the camera shots, doesn't it? That, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? In front of the face, lights the face perfectly. But she goes into, you know, as you do in a horror film, when you hear a spooky noise, you light a candle and you go into the creepy, you go into the creepy loft. It's what you do. So she goes in and she doesn't really see anything, does she?
What do you think is in there? Because we never really find out what it is.
That's the thing. You don't really see anything.
Is it the demon, do you think, Jack?
Yes, it's the demon. Of course it is.
But what releases the demon, Jack?
He does. He unearths it in Iraq.
No, we know that. But how does it get its little feet from the from the loft, down the little stairs, into Regan? What's the bit? Because she opens her eyes, doesn't she?
Look, I mean, if the demon can get out the gates of hell, I'm sure it can get out of a fucking attic.
That's got me, sorry. That's got me. Oh, God, I'm stuck with these stairs again. I've got out of hell, but I'm stuck with these stairs. I can't work them.
Right, there's one other thing that I hate in horror movies, and it is, I can't even say the word, an Ouija board, yeah?
An Ouija.
It's just Ouija.
Okay. Ouija. Right. Ouija board.
Well, they're things that shouldn't exist. They're bad things.
Ah, no. Now hold on. She
plays with that.
She plays with that, and Captain.
She lets the demon out the attic. That's what I think.
That's it.
I think the demon can't walk down the stairs. I think you're right. I think he is stuck there, and I think she lets him out.
I think the demon needs to be invited in, doesn't it?
That's how them boards are meant to work. But I think they're really bad things, and they should be banned. Do you know what? I once got really scared about it in high school because a film came out called Ouija or whatever. And it was awful and I hated it. And one of the teachers said to me, if it makes you feel better, it's the same people that make them boards that make Monopoly. And I was like,
well,
does not make me feel better whatsoever. What,
Waddingtons? Waddingtons have made Ouija boards, have they? No, they haven't, Mrs. Smith.
Hold on, it's coming through. Park Lane. Oh, they've got a house on it. You do not pass go. Don't go on the Ouija, it does my head in. It takes hours and there's always an argument at the end. The demon always cheats.
They're awful things. Like, they should be. I would never, ever dream. Like, even talking about it on the podcast is slightly unnerving me.
So she sits down with her mum, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Because her mum goes, oh, what's this? And she goes to Ouija board and she says,
have you ever played with it?
Yeah. And she says, yes, I've been playing with it and there's someone here called Captain, I can't remember what his name is.
Howdy.
Howdy. And it moves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On its own. She says, oh, we'll play together. And then it stops and it won't do it.
Mm. So that's it. That is demoned into child. And then it's kind of the film, we have that journey, like Jack said in the synopsis, of is this girl ill? What is wrong with this girl? Now we know, the audience know that we're watching the film that is The Exorcist, and we know that she's been playing with Ouija boards and the thing in the attic's not in the attic anymore. But mum's got to find that out, hasn't she? So we go through the quite creepy bit at the hospital, which is quite disturbing.
It is. It's the pain that she has to go through.
That was the one bit
when they were... So those are the real scanning machines. And some of those extras are really doctors. And they said, you know when she gets injected with that spinal and the blood pours out?
Mm.
That they actually did do that to
really?
Her.
To her?
And they put it to the girl. And they said that when they were coming to rate it, you know, they didn't want an 18, basically. They wanted an R. And they said that was the bit that disturbed them the most.
How's the ratings go in America?
Well, it was different back then. So you didn't want an X, which was basically...
Was that an 18?
Well, X...
Or was it 21?
X certificate. And you wanted an R where you could take a child in. But the X was basically like... it was like the top rating. They wouldn't let anyone in unless you were over 18, and he didn't want that. But they said one of the bits that was the most worrying was the bit in the hospital, because that was quite disturbing. She was kind of having an MRI on her brain, wasn't she? And the machines were spinning, but they were the real machines, and the people doing the acting were real doctors, and the guy putting the spinal into her neck.
Surely she didn't have the spinal.
Apparently she did.
Draw fluid off her spine.
Yeah, well, no, it's an injection to numb you, isn't it? Like you have an epidural. That's what they said.
I hope she got paid a lot.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So the hospital bit was a bit disturbing. I did like the way the doctor came out to talk to the mum and lit a fag.
I liked that
yeah.
bit.
I noticed that, yeah.
How is it, doctor? It's bad. I'm just going to light a cigarette in the hospital and talk to you about it.
Because it's the 70s.
Yes, but how bizarre, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Do you know what? One thing I will say, just to compliment the film, it hasn't aged that much, has it? It really doesn't feel like a film that old. Like, no. How old something like Psycho compared to that?
14 years previous.
Is it? Because, you know, last night I don't feel like I watched an old film.
Right.
Oh, that's quite good. It is a classic. So I suppose that's why, because it still makes people scared. It's still got themes. Because we're running alongside while she's investigating the child. We've got the stuff about the priest, haven't we? We're seeing also a side.
Old Father Ted. See him every now and then.
Mm. Old Father Ted, yeah. And then we've got another priest who's like a psychiatric priest, isn't he? Who we're running alongside, who visits his mum.
Father Karras.
Yeah, Father Karras. Who, the actor, did train as a priest.
Did he really?
Yeah, 3 years. So he said, I've got to do this part. He was an actor, first ever film job.
They auditioned Jack Nicholson for that part, you know.
Oh, did they?
And they turned him down. The director said no to Nicholson in the end because he didn't think he was holy enough. He thought someone like Nicholson and the charismatic that he is didn't see him as being that holy and couldn't really believe him to be a priest, which I kind of get in a way.
Yeah.
I do get that. And Jason Miller is brilliant anyway as Father Karras.
That's interesting.
So the mum is still going, trying to investigate, and they think it's a brain lesion, don't they?
Well, the mum, I don't think the mum does. I think the mum is aware that there's something deeper than her being, you know, mentally ill. I think she knows there's something else going on, but the doctors try and convince her that basically it's this one part of a brain, it's a frontal lobe.
Because I think they want to convince themselves that their science, medical expertise, it has to be something medical.
So they keep testing and testing, and then it reaches a point where the mum kind of says to someone, what is going to happen? And the science guy turns around and goes, I think there's only one piece of advice that we can give you, and that's God, really.
Yeah. Well, they sort of like run out of all options, don't they? And they say the only possible other thing it could be is something wrong with a brain. They don't say it's not. They say that if you get an exorcist...
Power of suggestion, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. To exercise what the mind feels is inside her, maybe it might release that thing from her brain and she'll be okay.
But at this point, as an audience member and the mum really know that it's definitely something evil, because we've seen her float in the bed, we've seen the bed shake, we've seen some nasty stuff at this point. You
the
know,
piss on the carpet.
Oof, that never comes out.
That never comes out. Did you see the poor girl?
Oh, the next it's coming day. Out. Is it coming out? I think out. So. No fucking. No,
no
not a prayer,
way.
Love.
I mean, started, when she was a puppy, did two pisses on the new carpet. That's never come out.
No,
that's stained.
It is the way to enter any house party, really, isn't it? If you want to make an entrance, that's the way to make an entrance.
Who
I loved that
exorcist?
Scene, actually, when they're having that party and they're all by the piano. Everything's fine.
So normal.
So, yes, and you hear the little conversations earlier with the astronaut. He's talking to the rest of the crowd and mingling, talking about space and what it's going to be like. And she comes down the stairs, having not known anything about this guy, and says, "You're going to die up there."
Yeah.
And I think, imagine hearing that, just in a party, and someone saying that, and then you'd be freaked out. You would be freaked out. And, yeah, there's just...
And it's almost like the party, because the director of the film gets pissed, doesn't he, and starts having a go at the kind of caretaker of the house, saying he's German Nazi and all this.
Yeah.
It's almost that feeling that the demon is creating
this atmosphere,
that bad vibe, that nasty vibe.
But at the same time, at the party, that's when the mum meets one of the priests, isn't it? Because she meets this priest who puts her in touch with the main
Damien
priest,
Karras.
Doesn't she? Yeah.
Yes.
So it is. It's a good point that, you know, that kind of evil starts to come to a head, but there is still the ultimate thing that's going to resolve this there.
Mm. So she goes to our kind of hero priest and says, "Look, I need some help." And he basically fobs her off, doesn't he? He basically goes, "Look, there haven't been exorcisms for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And it's just not proved. And actually, to get an exorcism passed, you're going to have to really prove that she's beyond any shadow of doubt possessed." And he goes to the head, the bishop? Oh, no, he goes and sees her, doesn't he, first, to assess her.
Yeah, and he does the holy water that's not holy water.
He tricks her.
Yeah.
Good trick. Good trick on the demon.
When
there,
he speaks to the demon, the demon brings up his mum.
Can you stop putting
passed.
A D on the end of demon?
It's demon. You're saying demoned.
So that's a new one onto the list with favourite children and...
Pacific.
The demoned.
Demon.
It's a bit like a diamond and a demon.
What? Demon. What is it?
No, it's just demon.
Demon.
They don't...
Demon.
Demon.
So...
Yeah, demon.
Before I was rudely interrupted there, the demon...
Yeah.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Yeah, the demon mentions his mum. That's when I think he starts to realise. So he's got the holy water trick.
How good is the girl?
Yeah, Linda Blair.
How good is the girl when she's doing that to him? Because he doesn't believe it, does he? He goes in there thinking, yeah, all right, you're going to try and freak me out, but you don't really know anything.
The girl is mint throughout, really.
But that's when her voice starts to change. It's when it's the voice. And the voice is a different actress. It's not Linda Blair.
Ah, because I said to Ben, I went, is it the same person all the way through?
No, the person who did the voice is an actress called Mercedes McCambridge.
Great name. What's your name? Mercedes McCambridge, nice to meet you.
And for that voice, she ate eggs and drank copious amounts of whiskey so that it would distort her voice even more, and chain-smoked as well. And while she was doing voice recordings, she insisted on having a priest present, and she would be strapped to a chair by her neck, her arms, her legs, ankles and everything. And she would try with all of her might to get out of the chair while screaming for hours on end.
Oh, wow.
And the director...
Would you think it's fair to
the
say...
The director said it's possibly one of the scariest things he's had to watch and witness while directing a film.
Academy Award for Best Sound Mixing.
Did it?
That film. Yeah.
Well, doesn't surprise me.
I think Mercedes sounds like she needs a priest, to be fair, though.
But
that,
it did,
that
it
is going
did
into
well,
some
didn't it?
Detail.
But they gave Linda Blair the Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress, not knowing... that somebody else had done the voice. They thought it was Linda Blair. But once they've given the nomination, then it came out later, they were like, oh, shit. Because that's like more than half the job, I think.
Well, I don't know. She's doing a
but
good job.
She's doing a very good job.
But would it have been the same if it was still sounding like a 14-year-old
without
girl?
The voice?
And I don't think it would. I think it's that voice. That voice makes you think...
They must have tried... they must have tried her to do the voice and then have gone, it's not going
to
work.
You wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't sound, you wouldn't get deep enough, would you?
No.
It's got to not sound like anything that would come out of a child. She throws up on the priest and the director said to the actor, don't worry, when she throws up on you, it's going to be on your chest. And then he turned around to the guy doing the special effects and said, spray it straight into his face.
Face.
So when he looks shocked, he thought, he wants to turn around and go, you fucking told me it was just on my chest. Straight in his face. She throws up. That I like that bit. When you can see in his face, he's like disgusted. So that's his first meeting with the demon, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the first time that the old boy from Iraq's back.
No. He needs help. That's a bit further on.
Yeah, no, that is. It's yeah, him that gets no, the no, sick in his face.
Karis gets it. Karis gets it first.
Then you get the bigger sick later on. You get two sicks, I think. So he goes away and goes, do you know what? I can't handle this demon on my own.
It's by the way, which version did you watch? Did you watch the crab down the stairs?
No, we didn't see that.
Have you seen that then?
I've seen it. I've seen the raw footage of the crab. But they didn't put it in the film, did they?
In the original, no. Because you
could
see...
But then they put it in the director's cut, did they?
So there's a scene called, a famous scene, when, like, halfway through the film, Linda Blair's character, Reagan, comes backwards, crab-like motion, like a yoga move, comes down the stairs and then spits blood out at the end. And it's quite a graphic scene. And it was cut from the original film because the director said it was a bit too graphic and it was a bit early on in the film.
Yeah.
I think it comes like...
Yeah.
It comes very soon.
And it takes the demon out of the room.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Which is interesting that the demon is kept in the room.
In the room. And it does all of its damage from that one room.
And they were unable at the time to take to CGI the wires out of the stunt person.
Interesting.
But then 30 years later, for like 25 years later, for the Millennium Edition, I think they were able to put it back in the film. It's a good scene. It's a good scene.
I think I might have seen a clip of it. We'll have to clip it and put it on the social media anyway.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
There's another, obviously, side run to the story that kind of, you know, fitted in quite nicely come the end, but obviously there's been the murder, hasn't there? So the director has been left alone in the room with the demon, and they've been murdered.
To babysit,
yeah.
And that jumps out the window.
It kind of adds to the priest, doesn't it? Because the priest is contacted by the police, the detective.
Yes.
I like it.
And the detective says, you know, is there anyone you know of being this ill to have done something like that? And the priest's like, do you know what? No, not a chance. And then when he meets the demon, he kind of puts two and two together.
Well, the head of the man who dies, the director dies, is completely span round.
It's that bit that sort of sat with me when I watched it and thought, oof, because he says Burt Dennings was found dead at the bottom of the stairs, but it's how he was found, with his head turned completely the other way around. It could happen in the fall, but it's very, very, very unlikely. It would have to be someone with great power and great strength becomes great responsibility.
Or pure evil. Which
or pure
is
demon,
what it was.
Diamond.
We get to the point where, you know, the priest realises he needs some more help. So he goes to see...
Because he's losing his faith as well.
Well, he goes to see the bishop, doesn't he? And he says to the bishop, there is only one option. We have to give an exorcism. And the bishop turns round and says, you can't do it. You need the help of someone that's already done one. Then we cue in...
Father Merrin.
The old boy. Who old found boy. It in the first place.
Who started it?
Yeah.
And gone, crikey, it took you a while to get hold of me. I found this ages ago.
Full circle. He comes in and he knows what he's dealing with, doesn't he? He knows exactly
he's full.
What
he's
it
full
is.
Beans. He ain't mucking around.
No.
He's been expecting
He's got the full... He's got everything on. He's got the cape. He's got the book.
I liked the little throwaway line of, he's very good. The last one he did lasted 4 weeks.
Yeah. Nearly killed him. Yeah.
Nearly killed him.
No, it's good when Carrie says, I've got it down to 4 demons, possibly. And so there's these personalities, and he goes, there's only one. Yeah. Like, won't hear anything of it.
It's the devil.
And he says, he's going to lie to us, and he'll try and throw us off, but he will also mix truth with some lies. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to anything. And he sees when they go in the room, and he's trying to exorcise him, and Karis is just frozen. Probably and because of the temperature in the room.
You can see their breath, can't
well,
you?
Well, Ben, dropped your big... What was your big fact you dropped out mid-film?
So big fact mid-film is... The bedroom's in a freezer. So he filmed it in a freezer and he got it so cold. So she, poor Linda Blair, is possessed. She's only wearing a nightie. It was so cold they could only film for 3 minutes.
Jesus!
Because she went out. That was it. Done. Hypothermia. 3 minutes. It got so cold that their breath started to turn to snow.
Oh my God.
The perspiration, the heat off the camera, the cameramen and women and the sound and then the actors, was turning little flakes of snow. So he insisted on filming, because now you can CGI breath. I was thinking about this film, you know, that Everest film, they CGI the breath and everything. But obviously then in 74, you couldn't.
No.
So when the two priests go in, it's very effective, isn't it? You see their breath.
Mm.
And you see hers and you're like, crikey.
And what an interesting choice as well, as a director, to make it cold when you're dealing with the devil. Because you'd have thought it'd just be boiling and red.
But they like it cold, don't they? Isn't that a thing that's kind of kept throughout horror as a theme? That they like to be, the devil spirits like to be cold. Because there's a whole bit of the window always being open. Her always tucking her back into bed.
Yes.
That's kind of a running theme, isn't it?
It's also a very visual
way. The stronger
the
demon gets, the colder it is.
Of you realising that you're in a room with something that's possessing the room. It's very clever.
Mm.
Very clever.
Mm.
I mean, it must have cost a bloody fortune, because you can only film for 3 minutes, stop, everyone get warm,
yeah,
and then go back in.
Mm.
But he loved that. The director loved that. The director loved spinning everyone around. So they're both in there with the demon. It's the big showdown,
isn't it? It's grand finale time, yes. It's the greatest show.
We're getting through it.
In between all this, though, we've had the head turnaround.
Head turn around, fantastic.
We've had the crucifix in the vagina.
That is disgusting. Yeah. That if they should have cut anything, they should have cut that. It was vile. It was wrong. That shouldn't have been in.
That is shocking.
Oh,
the head turn, the 180 head turn is a shock. When she gets flip-flacked in the bed, which is where she got the spinal damage in real life, because they put her into a tube. And then flick-flacked her all over the bed. So it wasn't a stunt girl, it was her.
It was her.
At 15. So she knackered her back. The mum got a back knackered, because when she gets hit by the demon, the director got someone else to hit her, and they hit her. So when she lands in a pile, that's a real reaction to being smacked. So she got smacked. So the demon is full on, isn't it?
That's the point where if you're going to get scared... Do you know what? It's not a scary, jumpy horror.
It's psychological.
Like, creepy and it's disturbing.
It is.
I think horror now has kind of been transfixed into this thing of what's going to make you jump, and loses the whole idea of being disturbed. Because that film is, like Jack said, psychological. It's disturbing.
Yeah. For me, I watched this film when I was about 10 or something like that, I think.
Just the right age.
And I remember not being scared, because I was waiting for the jumps. And it was only when it was explained to me from my uncle, actually. And he said, no, that is a very scary film. You're not thinking of it correctly. You should think and picture someone that you love of similar age. So think of your sister having to go through that. Of all the things with the doctors, first of all.
Mm.
Seeing all the pain that she has to go through. Then she's in the bed. Then you see her personality change. Then her physical appearance change. Her strength, everything. Everything of someone who you love so much. And I think that's a credit to Ellen Burstyn's performance as well in it. Because you do feel that she is absolutely at her wit's end.
And actually, the way the actors respond to not the fact it's just a demon, but to it's attacking their faith. Yeah. It's attacking what they truly believe is God.
Mm.
And he, as you said, the one priest loses his faith.
Yeah.
And that the demon is actively attacking their faith. Yeah. And their loved ones. And you're right, psychologically, that's why I think the opening where it roots it in Iraq and then like old evil comes in. So the two priests now, they have a go. She throws all up over the other priest again. He washes himself. And then the bit I absolutely love, which I think is brilliant, is they're right, we need a break.
Yeah, so they go off for a little
break. They do, but they're in there for a bit and I'm tired after watching them.
Yeah.
The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
Because the bed, she levitates off the bed, doesn't she?
And they're screaming it. They're going mental trying to control this demon, trying to get her back to a, you know, a sedate this demon.
No wonder they turn to each other for a cuppa.
It's a boxing match between good and evil
for a snack.
And
it's the way he goes. Right, we need a break, and then they go and sit outside
because they'd be knackered. They've just gone like three rounds with the devil himself. You would be.
I think as well, you kind of know at this point that it is coming to a head, don't you? You know that there's going to be an outcome. And when they go back in for that second time, that is kind of when, you know...
Well, he's not very well, is he, the older one? He takes a pill for his heart. He's not very well. So you think to yourself, he's going to go, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to get
killed. And he does. He gets killed.
And he does. He's brown bread. Karis comes in. He's gone. Demon's loving it. Demon's just sat
off
there
camera. Going, we don't see him. We see him. Don't see him die, do we?
No. But he's trying. But you see, the demon, Karis comes back in. Max is on the floor, dead. Demon's in the corner of the bed going, job done, one down,
yeah,
one to go. And then it's full on. He just goes for the demon, doesn't he? He goes, sod all the books, sod all everything else. I'm going wrestling.
I'm going to beat it out of him.
I'm going to beat it out.
Because he's a boxer, isn't he?
Yeah.
He was a boxer. And he does. He starts to lay into the demon.
And it's full kind of plot twist time, because good versus evil, there only seems to be one way to win. It only looks like evil's going to win, doesn't it? And then that's when he takes a decision on, and he almost summons the demon into himself.
Demon. He does. He says, take me, doesn't he? Yeah. And I think
that's the most disturbing bit of the film. When I see a grown man smacking
a young girl,
attacking a young child who's possessed. That's the bit of the film that spanned
me. I didn't see that, but I didn't see her as a young child then. I think that's what the film does a really good job of, because at times you see her as a young girl, then you see her as a young girl who's possessed. When in the end, when it was that battle, I purely saw her as a demon.
The demon.
Like, I saw so little of a girl in her. You just, and it was like the demon had fully won.
Yeah.
Did you notice he did those little cuts to see the demon's face slightly, a little flash of a picture? Yeah, very creepy. So Karis has gone toe-to-toe with the demon, says, take me. Suddenly, you see Karis's eyes change.
And then you see the girl. You see...
Yes.
You see...
She goes, starts
crying.
You
hear the cry.
Yeah.
Hear the cry.
And then it's that clever bit of he knows exactly what he's got to do. And he obviously has such a split time frame to make that decision. And he's out the window down
the stairs. His face changes, doesn't it? And his eyes roll. Yeah. And it turns, like, his eyes go green. And you think, the devil's in him. And then he fights the urge to kill the child. And he sees the window and goes, no! And jumps through.
Yeah.
And he goes
the
same way as Burt Dennings did. Out the window, down the steps that Joaquin Phoenix danced on in The Joker.
So then that's effectively the devil, the demon's dead in him. And then we get to the aftermath of the film, don't we, really?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a one famous shot where we see the old priest, the very, very famous shot. It's the old
shadow.
Yeah, where he gets out the car and he goes under the lamp and it's foggy and it's just him in the lamp, in the street lamp, just before he goes
in. It's the poster, isn't it, for the film, basically.
And that's from a Magritte painting. So the director wanted that shot to be exactly like the painting. So he set that all up. And that's one of the paintings that he based the film on and he loved.
Mm. Shall we rate it and rate sum up what we think in a way?
Yeah.
Who starts? You or Ben?
Ben never goes first.
So I was thinking about this. When we started this podcast, films you should have seen but haven't. And I think this is a film you should see.
Agreed.
I think it's the basis of a lot of horror. I think it's the first time we got an Oscar nom. It might not be... I think you said at one point about the makeup, Coulson, that the makeup was a bit cack. But I do think this is pretty groundbreaking. 74, it's pretty groundbreaking what this film did. I mean, I think it cost 14-odd million dollars and it's taken 450 million. I mean, you just couldn't get in when this came out. Everyone knew how frightening it was.
Which... if you bring in inflation, it's the highest grossing film for Warner Brothers ever. Wow. Stat.
Knocking them down, stat after stat. I'm going to go 8.5.
I'm giving 9 for me.
Ooh.
Same reasons that Ben sort of brings. There's kind of flaws with it for me, only because of like the head move. I mean, I am nitpicking. Heads that doesn't look real. That's it. I mean, that's it, really. Just makeup and things. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, brilliantly acted, directed, screenplay, everything. It won an Oscar, I think, screenplay.
It won 2 Oscars, so it won Best Sound Mixing, Best Writing, Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what you're going to think of this. 7.5.
That's good.
Okay. My reasonings for it not being higher, you probably won't agree with and you might find frustrating. But I think this is probably my generation and the way that that sort of film has gone. When you big it up, when you talk about it, I expect to be scared.
Yeah.
I expect horror. I expect... thriller. Mm. And when you compare it to the other scary films that you've made me watch, Jack, like Insidious and The Conjuring, like, yeah. I didn't get that. I think that is literally because my brain has boxed off because of the name of it, The Exorcist, which has been adapted through so many different films in like history.
Yeah.
And the story of someone having an exorcism.
Yeah.
I just think I expected pure scare.
I mean, it's built up in it. Everyone says it's the scariest film of all time. So, of course...
it's been stolen from so many times, which I could tell from that. And I just think, I'd probably set myself up for that thing.
Yes.
And I think if I was watching it in 1975, you would literally go, the fuck have I just watched?
Yeah.
What happened with that film, which doesn't happen so much with films now, is back in those days... obviously, people have told me about that. I wouldn't remember. But back in those days, you only really got one or two of these kind of films. And the build-up to you seeing that film was absolutely enormous. Because you'd never seen some of these techniques before. No. You'd never seen a young girl possessed. You'd never see... you know, there were just so many firsts.
Yeah.
And you're in a cinema. I tell you what does help. If you're in a massive cinema with loud. A load of people,
and it's loud.
It's loud and it is frightening, and everyone goes a bit quiet. And when you're in that room with them in a big cinema, and those two priests are trying to fight it, you get something from the crowd,
yeah,
a bit of atmosphere.
And I think that's slightly lost now.
I completely agree.
I think nowadays as well with a horror film, like you mentioned in the cinema, Ben. The bits I'm scared of, it's the sound that makes me jump more. You know, when they go, bah! there's a sudden noise. It's not so much what I'm watching. It's just that it's so bloody loud in the cinema, I think. And yeah, I think watching it at home does take away whatever horror film you're watching. You won't jump
But imagine,
as much.
Are there many horrors that, 50 years later, we're still going to be talking
and
about?
I think that's the thing, like, it obviously has set out its stolen history and it has kept to it.
Yeah.
And that's probably why it's got 25 out of 30.
Yeah.
You know, it's a solid score. That's a good score for us.
Yeah, very good, actually. Yeah. And actually, do you know what, Coulson? I'm glad you got something from it.
Yeah,
I'm glad you saw
good film,
what the film
good
was trying to
and
do.
Like you said, the point of the podcast is to see the films we shouldn't, you know, we haven't seen, but we should have. And that is a film I should have seen, and I've now seen it. So a bit like the same feeling I got with Green Mile. Do you know what?
Yeah.
Hands up, I'm glad I've watched it, because I can have that conversation about that film now.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Time for something new to the Sofa Cinema Club, then.
Ooh.
So this is the first time we've ever done this. But I'm about to go on to our Instagram and find out what film we are watching next week.
Oh, I forgot about this.
It's out of our hands. It's completely out of
our
hands.
Can you tell us what can you tell us who's in the final? Because I don't
even know
that.
The final is Stand By Me versus Wolf of Wall Street. And I know that Ben is a massive Stand By Me fan.
I wanted Planes, Trains or Con Air.
You wanted the other two.
I just wanted Stand By Me. But I've got a feeling.
I tell you what, it's tight. The thing that's won has won by 52%.
Oof.
So it's...
Oosh.
There's 4% in it. It's less than 60 votes in it.
I think Trump and Biden, I mean, they were further apart or closer, were they?
I'm not leaving until we get a recount.
Everyone's been talking about these big votes this week, and everyone knows the biggest vote of them all is Sofa Cinema Club, what film are we watching?
So what is it called? Hit us.
Obviously, I'm very happy. It's The Wolf of Wall Street.
It's The Wolf.
Yep. 52% to 48%. And it's the first time we've ever done it. So it's the film that I guess half of you wanted us to watch, just more than half of you wanted us to watch. So we will be watching it next week, and we look forward to being joined hopefully by one of you guys for the synopsis.
Mint, get ready with your synopsis.
Keep in touch with us on social media. Our social media, I think a few of you have noticed, has changed. So a big shout out to producer Henry and former producer Ben, because the Sofa Cinema Club, it has changed on social media. I think people have noticed that.
Oh yeah. Oh,
we're in the big league. We're in the big league.
We're in the big league.
We know what we're doing.
And if you want to follow us on Instagram, it's at Sofa Cinema Club, and Twitter, it's at Sofa Cinema Club. So keep an eye on there for more stuff about the podcast, more about us, and our Disney Christmas competition that's going to be starting soon. So we will see you next week for episode 3 of series 3, which is, for you guys, The Wolf of Wall Street. Good night, God bless.
Good night.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.